I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Okay, hun, so we are taking a very short break.
In the month of?
June.
Right on.
Right on. And in June, what happens, hun?
We celebrate half of the year being over.
Yes, we do. Or we dread it. One of the two.
It's either half over or half left.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's also the summer solstice this month.
Right. We celebrate Father's Day this month.
We do. And most of all, we're celebrating Pride.
Pride Month.
Pride Month.
Awesome.
And so we always celebrate Pride Month at The Only One in the Room. It's very important to us. Mm-hmm. And we like to celebrate the voices from the LGBTQ plus community.
Yes.
And so that's what we're doing for this week. You're going to hear those voices. They are re-releases. They are some of our favorites.
They're fantastic stories.
Fantastic. And we know you. I won't say you that we hope you enjoy them. I know you're going to enjoy
we
them.
We know you will enjoy them.
Yeah. Enjoy the show.
I'm Nick North, and I'm the only trans set of five in the room. I feel really attached to who I was, not because I want to be that person, but because I think that that person deserves respect. The things that I fought through as that person, I think that that person deserves celebrating, because that person is also my kid's birth parent. And I don't ever want anyone to think that I am embarrassed to have birthed them, or embarrassed to have been a woman even, because that would imply that being a woman is less than being a man.
Imagine you were assigned female at birth, but nothing ever felt quite right. And you found yourself wondering over and over why you couldn't just be a boy like all the other boys. Brand strategist Nick North lived as a woman and married a man, giving birth to four beautiful children before meeting Catherine, the love of his life. But what would you do if you came to understand that you weren't gay, but trans, and it was something that you could no longer ignore? Would you conceal your real identity and try to be the mom your kids had always known? Or would you take the steps to live in your truth and share your journey with the world? Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all too familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they, too, had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show. Nick North, hello, how are you?
I am so wonderful.
Yes, yes, you are. Yes, you are so wonderful. And just, you know, from the top, I want to give everybody a rooster warning because there will be roosters crowing in the background. And if, like me, you are terrified of them, don't be scared. They can't come through your device and get you.
Yeah, you guys, she is terrified. We have to tell this story one day.
One day, but not today. But what I was going to ask you actually before we started, Nick, is tell me, like, what movie does your whole family gather for over and over? Like, you'll always watch what?
Karate Kid, time and time again.
Karate Kid, the original?
Yeah. Yes, of course the original.
Okay, good.
Yes.
That is my personal favorite.
Mr. Miyagi.
Yes.
Oh. I know. Are you Cobra Kai fans?
I am. I've watched the whole thing.
I've watched a couple. I wouldn't say I'm a fan yet, but I'm still giving it a chance. But I really love the original.
Yeah, you have to let Johnny's misogynist, like, terrible grossness, yes. You have to let it fully fester and to see it come out and everyone be like, dude, you're not cool. Stop that.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right? You have to give it a chance. You have to hate him before you can love him. And
sometimes the
many of us who were, you know, seen as female or lived life as a woman would know is that can be triggering.
Yes.
And you maybe don't want to watch that on TV, but it's worth it in the end.
All right. I will definitely get back into it now that you said that. So thank you for that. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, Hun. So, Hun, I'm so excited. Today we have Nick North with us.
I know. This is going to be awesome.
Ooh.
I'm excited.
Nick is a brand strategist and a dad of five, husband of one. He also happens to have spent the first 30 years of his life living as a woman. He came out as trans at 30 with the love and support of his wife, kids, friends, and even his ex-husband. That's pretty cool, right?
That is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm all ears.
Yeah, me too. Uh-huh. Tell me, Nick, how do you identify?
Well, there's a lot of ways I identify. I identify as a dad. I identify as a trans man. I identify as a man. I identify as a husband. I identify as a queer man. I identify in so many ways, right?
I asked that question of all of our guests, and mainly because one of our guests in our first season was a guy by the name of D'Lo. I don't know if you know who he is. He's trans as well, and he taught us about pronouns and that type of thing. And I was just so taken with the idea of making sure that we get that right that I ask all of our guests how they identify now.
Yeah, so I use he, him, his pronouns.
Okay, yeah. Boom. Yeah, boom. And Nick, I totally forgot this. Your wife was at Brave Magic with me, right?
Yeah, she totally was.
That's so weird.
Right?
So, but it's pretty cool because Brave Magic is what started this podcast because I was there. I was the only Black person in the room. I wrote about it for HuffPo. The article went viral. We started getting responses and created the podcast to tell those stories.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because your story really resonated with her because she is a white woman, but she grew up, she moved to Japan when she was 4 and went to Japanese school. And so she was the only pasty white blonde kid with frizzy hair in the room her whole life. So she has this like weird, like she doesn't understand it because she's a white woman, so she has all this privilege.
Right.
But at the same time, she does understand what it's like to be the only person in the room for like months at a time.
Really interesting. So like,
yeah, that's almost like a perfect translation.
Yeah. We should get her on the show. I'm like,
well, she's pretty awesome. I don't want to brag, yeah. But you know.
We will talk to you about that. But that's really interesting.
Yeah. So that was cool. And the fact that I actually bought the Brave Magic ticket for her because I saw it come up and I knew it was going to sell out instantly.
Right. Right.
And we were on a vacation at a friend's house. Like, she had a Airbnb in by the ocean for a month. So we went and stayed for a week or whatever. And it was this thing where like we were on vacation and I was like, we should do this and it's going to sell out right away. And so I just bought her the ticket without telling her. And so it was this like, cause she was like, well, I would think about this forever. And I would tell myself all the reasons why I shouldn't do it because we should spend that money on our family and blah, 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 blah. All that other mom guilt stuff. And I just like snuck it in there. So it's kind of fun that it's all full circle.
It's all these synergies and serendipities and very cool. And so, and then you and I connected on Instagram.
Yeah. Cause who doesn't love the gram?
I checked out your profile and I was like, yo, only trans dad of five. I need to get you on the show.
Yeah. There's not many of us who have done it this many times. There's more people who are trans who have birthed children than you would think, but I'm definitely the only one I know that's birthed this many of them.
Okay, so we're going to jump into that then. You tell me that you were raised by your grandma, right?
So my grandma and my moved in with my mom when I was like four, and when my mom got divorced the second time. And then sort of my mom was like there, but you know how sometimes they're there. Rooster. There, but they're not actually there, you know?
Yeah.
So it was that.
It was that. Okay. So there were other people present in your life. Your mom was present,
sure.
But your grandma was kind of the one that...
She was number one.
She was number one. So on your site, you talk about being 6 years old, sitting on the stairs of your house with hot tears on your face, wondering, why can't I just be a boy like all the other boys? Can you tell me that moment or talk to me about that?
I think that around, you know, they say that kids start to get an idea of their gender around the age three, right? That's when they start to sort of really grasp what's going on there. And I think I really kept thinking that like, well, I would like grow a penis soon, any moment now, you know, like that was going to happen. Like,
right.
And that it would be this thing where like, oh, something would happen and I would evolve. I would like come into my own and get to be the boy that I was. And there was just this moment where she was just like, yeah, kid, that's like, I love you so much, but that's not going to happen. And so just, you're going to have to move on.
Right, right. And you tried.
I did. Yeah. I was like, okay, well, and you know, I didn't know that there was even a word for what I was, right? Like I was born in 85, which is not that old, but it's old enough to be like, you know, the only gay person I knew died of AIDS. So there's a whole like, ooh, you do not tell people when, you know, you're assigned female at birth that you're really into ladies when the only gay person you know died of AIDS and you're pretty sure you're actually a boy. There's a lot of like,
there's
as
a
kid, you just lock that up and push that down.
And I'm sorry, tell me where you grew up.
I grew up in Oshawa. So it's a small GM town outside of Toronto.
A GM town?
Yeah, like General Motors.
Oh, General Motors. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Also the headquarters of Hell's Angels, in case you're wondering, in Canada.
So GM and Hell's Angels.
That's what rolls there.
That's what's up.
That's okay.
So how was it being a teenage person living as a girl then? How was that?
I tried really hard at it. I fell in love with all my best friends but didn't tell them and then pretended not to be heartbroken when they got boyfriends. I let them give me makeovers so I could be girly. At one point I dated my best friend's brother so I could like get closer to her. And I don't think I realized that that's exactly what I was doing. You know, when you look back afterwards and you're like, oh, that was so obvious. I was so pathetic. That's so cute of me. Aw, little me.
Right.
I can see it like that now, but I don't know that I knew that what was happening.
Right. Well, because you had also, you had all these feelings that you knew to be true for you, but you'd had to push them aside.
Yeah, because they weren't safe.
Yeah, because they weren't safe. So they couldn't be your motive, right? You couldn't think of them as your motive.
No, that couldn't be. And my mom, whom I pretty much hated, was sure that I was gay. And so I think that I was sure that I wasn't going to be gay just to like spite her. Like, you don't know me.
Right.
Because I didn't really have a stable family. I found Jesus in junior high, like all good poor kids do. And it was that thing where, like, oh, you would sign a petition to, like, against gay marriage when you walked into the church. So lock that up, because that was my family. That's where I knew there was food. That's where there were people to be friends with. That's where people took care of me. That's where I had connection. That's where I had this sense of family.
Mm. What did you look like then when you were a teenager?
I looked like a tomboy.
Like, if I were going to meet you at a coffee shop, you would say, look for...
The quirky kid wearing, like, I always wore, like, thrifted corduroys that were too big for me. And, mm-hmm. like, the like, punk rock skater kid.
Yeah.
That's who you would be looking for.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And I hid the, like, yeah, I'm just a tomboy because girly things suck. But I remember once at church, there was, like, a missionary that was there at youth group. And someone said something or something like that. And that the guy was like, yeah, like that boy back there. And I remember just being like, oh, but I'm a girl. and like actually like saying it like, I'm a girl. And like it just being this whole like really awkward moment because like.
He thought you were a boy?
He thought I was a boy.
Oh, well, that's good.
It was great for me. Yeah. Because it was like, but it was also that like, oh, God, they know my
right,
secret.
Right. Don't call attention to it, but I
yeah,
am.
Exactly. Right. And then I, you know, like every good queer person does, I found the safest person of the opposite gender I could find, and I promptly married them at the age of 19.
Right. And who was that person?
He was the worship pastor at the church I went to. We left the church and got married.
You left the church. Why did you leave the church?
Because we were in that group of, like, I don't want to sign petitions against gay marriage anymore. Mm. And I don't really know that my beliefs line up with this. And all the other reasons why people leave churches.
Right.
There's so many.
So, yeah, there are so many.
There's so, so many.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
So tell me about your ex-husband.
He was just my best friend. He was the nicest, greatest guy. He was my best friend. And we sort of had this, like, we're like in it together. Like, we're doing this. Look at us doing life together, being best friends. We had this life plan. We were going to have 4 kids. It was going to be great. We moved west and did different things. And then we moved to Calgary and bought a house. And then we were like, we have a house and a dog and it has 3 bedrooms. So we should have kids. And then we had more kids. And then all of a sudden, 10 years had gone by and we had 4 kids and I had a business and he had a business and we were roommates and I fell in love with my wife. And I was like, well, damn it, that's really unfortunate because I have to go get married now.
I'm going to just stop you because you just skipped over a whole bunch of stuff that I have questions over.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how it felt to me. It was like, and then I fell in love with Catherine.
Right, right. And we're definitely going to get to that because that is just as interesting. I want to talk about just, first of all, tell me what it was like for you being the pastor's wife.
Well, I never was really a pastor's wife. We left right before we got married.
Okay.
So it was like that, like, it was set up to be that. We were engaged. It was going to be great.
Right, right.
Look at us taking on the world, helping people everywhere find Jesus or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized we didn't want to do that. So we left. And I took a job in Vancouver. And he was like, cool, that sounds fun. So we just packed our car up with our things and we sold our house and we moved to Vancouver.
So now talk to me about, you knew you wanted babies, right?
So as a kid, I didn't want them. I was sure that I didn't want kids because I didn't want to screw them up.
Why did you think you were going to screw them up?
Because I had such a screwed up childhood. You know, I had so much baggage. I have so much generational trauma and so much of my own shit. And I just sort of at a young age was like, woof, I'm not doing this. This is no, hard no. This is no, I'm not going to do this to someone else.
Mm-hmm. You just gave me another question. You talked about generational trauma. Was your dad around?
So my dad was and wasn't. My dad is a great guy. He too got married when he was like 20 because he got someone pregnant.
Mm.
And my mom was really hard to be married to and is a narcissist and is a whole bunch of terrible things. And so I can understand that in the 80s, there wasn't really another option for him. There wasn't like a,
like a 22, co-parenting.
Yeah, like you just didn't have the same rights, you know? I mean, that's just the way it was. And it wasn't what was expected of him, right? That's not what was expected of men then. And my mom got remarried right away.
You had a stepfather.
I did, but then he left when I was just before I started kindergarten. So then it was that, like, my dad had sort of gone on with his life and had his own thing. And then he got someone else pregnant again. He's got a bad habit of that, I guess. And they got married and he made a life with her. And, you know, it was 8 years later, he was a different person. He had grown into a different person. And I think that he just did the best that he truly knew how to do. And he thought that not fighting, I think, was the right thing. I just think he didn't know what to do.
Yeah, you know? I understand that. I completely understand that. And that is
not a bad person, just not a very present one while I was growing up.
Right. And just like you said, just it sounds like he just didn't know. Didn't know that there were options that were that he would have been able to fight for. And the situation sounds like it was difficult anyway.
Yeah, and I don't know that he would have had the skills at that time to even do the fighting. Right. Like, I don't know what 22-year-old man in the 80s is like really great at knowing how to parent anything. Like, I, you know?
I mean, and certainly, you know, circa 2021, there are a lot more tools available to people. So you had decided when you were a kid, having grown up this way, that you'd prefer not to have children.
I was like, fuck no.
Right. And then you got married. And so what changed for you when you got married?
I think I did my first round of healing. I got married. I stopped speaking to my mother. So I sort of cut that toxic relationship out of my life. I started doing therapy for the first time. I felt like, oh, look at me. I have a stable job. I can provide for a child. Chris and I like each other. That's pretty cool. We have a house. We have these things. Like, oh, I could see how this could be great. And I think because we could never find our own, we never found where we fit properly, Chris and I, in the world. And so we sort of made our own little world.
Right. And it was very safe.
Yeah, it was safe. And to this day, still one of my best friends. So it made sense. I can see in hindsight that it made sense that we would create a life together.
When we talked on the phone, I was curious about this, and you told me it was okay to ask you about it. So I'm going to ask you now again. My impression was that for someone who is a boy and now a man who was born with female genitalia or assigned female, the idea of being pregnant, it triggers like the wrong stuff because it triggers everything that's female. And you said that you liked it. So I was confused about that.
Yeah, I didn't like being pregnant.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
I loved the experience of having given birth.
Oh, all right. All right. So my notes were wrong.
Yeah.
So can you tell me about what it was like
being
to be pregnant?
Was the worst. Ugh. And anyone who's like, oh, I love pregnancy. I used to say that like, oh, well, you're lying. Or it's like that Men in Black thing where they flash you and tell you what your reality is instead of like the actual reality. Yeah, it's like it's that shit happening right there. That's what it is.
What was it like though?
It's terrible. It was like this instant thing. I realize now the reason why I hated it and it was so uncomfortable for me was because instantly it identified me as female.
Right? Yeah.
It identified me as a female who at first sight what people would assume was having sex with a man, and like all of those things were against who I was, but I didn't know that. And so it just felt like, ugh, like nails on a chalkboard the whole time. Then there was also the fact that like I was sick the entire 40 weeks.
Oh, poor baby.
Like my first kid, I dropped down to 108 pounds. I'm 5'9".
Damn.
You are not at 4 months pregnant supposed to be 108 pounds. That's Mm-mm. not a normal weight. And like, that's like, I was Princess Kate sick. Okay. That's what we're talking about.
You said Princess Kate sick.
Right? Like,
yeah.
I'm Canadian. I know all about the monarchy.
I hear you. I did not like being pregnant either at all. I was very excited about it. And then as soon as it started happening, I kept looking around and going, you guys lied to
me. You're all liars. I am not glowing.
This is not fun.
Like, I'm sweating from the vomit. That's right. What's happening here.
Well, and it was just weird. Like, everything grew and there was something moving around inside me. I did not dig it at all.
Yeah, I didn't dig it either.
So tell me about giving birth then.
So in many ways, it's terrible because you're like, you lose all dignity, you know. There's no dignity in birth. There's none. You're just like, oh, you want to see my junk? Great. Do you want to bring some students in to also try it out? Cool. There's that. Also, I lived in a small rural town. And so, like, you would then see, like, the doctors and the nurses, like, at the grocery store. Eventually, actually, one of the men, the doctors who delivered one of my kids, after transition, I started rock climbing with him. And he kept being like, you just look so familiar. I just did. And eventually I had to be like, let me tell you about something that you maybe don't know.
Right.
You've had your hands in all sorts of places, sir.
Right.
And it was just this like, that makes total sense. Okay. Like,
right.
It was just like, I was like, did you have a sibling? Do you?
Right.
No,
that was me.
Uh-huh.
The sibling
here
was
I
me.
Am.
That was still me. That's weird, though.
Yeah. That's crazy.
But you know what it's like to give birth, I assume, because you have two children or more.
Yeah. I have two. Yeah.
Yeah. That, like, you're also in it, and there's something primal that happens that your body takes over, and your body just does what your body is meant to do. And it turns out my body is really good at giving birth. Also, most people, when they start testosterone, they stop menstruating pretty much right away. I, 10 months in, still had a regular cycle. And even when I got my hysterectomy, they were like, oh, you've ovulated twice this month. Good job. Like, wow. I was so easily knocked up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was just meant to have these four kids real quick, like.
Yeah.
In, out, bing, bang, done. My longest labor was 5 hours.
Wow. You have four kids. They're pretty close in age, right?
We have five, but I
birthed
four. Right,
right. You birthed four. And so
Catherine birthed our eldest.
Yes, yes. You're not step, you're blended.
We're blended,
which,
yes,
I love. I saw that on your site as well. With each child, was the conflict within you growing bigger or stronger? Like, were you feeling like, did you know at some point during that time that you were trans? Like, this is not what you were, or what was going on?
Yeah, so mostly what happened, I think, was every time I had a baby, I was so happy with who I was for just a little bit. For me, there was that glow of, like, I am keeping this human alive. I created this human. I love this human with everything inside of me more than I thought a human could love a human. Like, the first 6 months to a year of raising a baby, there's nothing to me like it. If you were like, do you want me to give you a newborn right now, even though I have five children, I would say yes. I would take a baby in a heartbeat. I love them. And it was this thing where, like, oh, finally being a woman had an upside.
Okay.
Right? I got to be their mom. And as we all know, moms are superior to dads in the world of, like, the vision that the world puts out there. In societal norms, moms are more loved, more sacred, more whatever. They are, like, the ultimate love. And I'm sure that my secret codependency attachment issues have something to do with that also. But, like, there was an upside to being a woman for once. And then between kids, what would happen is that period of happiness would get shorter and shorter until finally when I birthed my fourth kid and I was like, I'm not happy. What's happening? I don't understand. And it was around then that I was also like, I wonder if I'm gay. I really think about breasts a lot. I don't think that straight women do that much. Like, there was a lot of like,
And what was Chris thinking, or was he sensing anything, or was
no,
he...
I don't think so.
No.
I mean, he's a man.
Yeah.
And we had this, like, our relationship was pretty platonic. We were good friends.
Right.
That was sort
of... As are a lot of straight marriages.
Yeah, aren't they? Let's be real.
There's a
you
lot of...
You can't be all that to one person.
Right. Well, some people can, but a lot of people aren't, you know?
Yeah.
They're just really
Esther
good
Perel
friends.
Says you can't. It just means that those people are getting some of those needs met somewhere else. It doesn't have to be the sexy ones.
Interesting.
But who am I? And maybe Esther Perel isn't God either. So
I love her
know.
Podcast, though.
Me too. I'm like, yeah. I think she is God.
So tell me what it was like after birthing four children. What was the turning point for you where you said, I'm not even gay, but I'm trans? Or was there a period of time where you thought you were gay?
I just thought I was gay for a while.
Okay.
So I was really disappointed to be trans, actually, because here's the thing, is that, like, gay is not a big deal anymore. You can be gay and no one gives a crap, right? And I was like, oh, sure, I have to be the one that's harder than that. Crap. You know, like, why?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It would have been easier just to be a lesbian. It would have, it's that, like, there's something hard about the invisibility of looking like a cis straight white man. Even though the goal for a while there was to look like a cis straight white man. It's this, like, double whammy of, like, but then my identity is also erased, right? My queerness, no one sees me and is like, oh, there's that nice queer couple. I'm, like, smiling at gay people being like, yeah, what's up? Like, doing the cheap wave, you know? But they're all like, why is that straight dude talking to me like that? What's going on? And I'm like, oh, damn it. Again, why don't we have a special handshake? Right?
No,
can't
but
we
that's
wear a
really
badge?
Interesting. I've
right?
never but heard that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I feel really attached to who I was, not because I want to be that person, but because I think that that person deserves respect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. The things that I fought through as that person, the things that I made it through to get to here, I think that that person deserves respect. And I think that that person deserves celebrating because that person is also my kid's birth parent, you know? And I don't ever want anyone to think that I am embarrassed to have birthed them or embarrassed to have been a woman even, because that would imply that being a woman is less than being a man, right? And so there's a lot of like feminism in that, and there's a lot of like fighting the man in that for me, of being like, no, I'm not going to be ashamed that I identified as female or that I was assigned female at birth. That is not inferior to being assigned male at birth.
Mm. You referring to yourself before you came out as trans as another person? Is that how it feels?
It feels like the same person, but in a dream, if that makes sense. Like, I was the same person, but you know when you were, like, a stupid teenager and you, like, went away to your first year at college or wherever or whatever you did when you were, like, 17, 18, 20, in that range, and then you were, like, just a big idiot, and you see yourself now and you're like, oh, my God, who was that person?
Right,
I wasn't
right.
even that person.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Okay.
You know that you were that person who did that stupid thing. Like, you know, we've all done really dumb things that we wish we could take back, especially now that we're all a lot more aware of the things that we've internalized and like taken on, and the systemic racism that we have absorbed as a white person. I am like steeped in it, and I can see that I am also steeped in my own transphobia, and I'm also steeped in my own homophobia, and I'm unlearning all these things even as a person who is trans.
Right.
Right.
Wow, that's really interesting. So that you can be all those things at the same time.
Yeah, I didn't even identify as a feminist until after I transitioned.
So I'm just going to jump ahead a little bit. I want to make sure we have time for all the rest of the stuff. Did you meet Catherine before you got divorced?
Mm-hmm.
You did. And
yeah,
you fell in love with her before you got divorced?
Absolutely. And I had to go home and divorce my husband because I fell in love with my wife.
Right. And how was that? Was he...
He was not happy.
He was not happy. Okay.
He was not into that. I think for him, he was like, we have a good thing going here. And me leaving meant that he had to confront a lot of his own things that he was hiding. Not like hiding on purpose, but like, oh, well, if he's going to go be who he is, well, crap, well, who the hell am I? I only know who I am inside of this relationship with these kids too. You know, he's changed careers. He's gay now, he has all these things going on, like he's his own person too, and we've both turned into people we like better.
Interesting. He wasn't happy with
he was not happy.
Yeah, you coming to him and telling him this, because you guys had built this safe world, like you talked about, where it worked. You were really good friends, you had these four beautiful children.
And we had a life that people would look at and go, oh, yeah, like, look, they have the nice house and the nice car, and they, like, they've got that fancy trampoline, not one of those regular trampolines.
Right, right.
Right? Like, yes. You know, it was those, like, stupid signifiers that were like, look, we're doing a good job.
Absolutely. And then you meet Catherine, you fall in love with her, you go to him and say, I'm in love with somebody else, I need to be with her.
I know I said, I'm a lesbian.
Oh, you said I'm a lesbian, okay.
I was like, yeah. I wasn't about to be like, I fell in love with someone else, because I thought that would be really hurtful.
Right. Oh, I see. So just like, this is wrong for me, because
yeah,
I need to be
super queer, not into it anymore, really want to try out some vaginas. And he was like, whoa, just hold your roll.
Right. So he didn't know at all.
I mean, he says he didn't, but I'm sure if I asked him now, he would be like, well, I guess maybe, right?
A little bit. Well, it's interesting what we allow ourselves to know in order to keep that, you know, that bubble of safety.
That self-preservation. Right?
Yes. Yeah. So then once you and Catherine started living together before you got married, or did you get married right away?
We did long distance for a while. I had my kids Monday through Friday 1 week, Monday through Thursday the other week. And then on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday weekend, I would fly to Portland and we would be together for 4 days. And then I'd fly home and I would do that twice a month. And that's how we did our first 17 months together. after being together for a year, we started to blend our like kids. So we would do like joint vacations and the kids would come with me to Portland. And then Adventure and Catherine would come to Calgary. And like we started getting their rooms ready and we did so much therapy. So much therapy around blending our families, because it turns out that there's really no good advice out there.
Interesting. Because people don't know what to do.
They don't know what to do.
They don't.
Right?
Yeah.
And every situation is a little bit different.
Right.
So.
Yeah, Scott and I have a blended family. He has two girls and I have two boys.
And the books are not there, are they?
Oh, no. We've kind of figured it out as we go along.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it was intuitive, but some of it was definitely advised. But really based on people's mistakes.
Yeah, you're like, you saw how that went. You were
right.
Like, nope, gonna cross that off the list of possibilities. F no.
Exactly. Okay, I'm gonna skip ahead again. When you transitioned, how long into your relationship with Catherine was that?
So it wasn't like a, hey babe, I'm trans, guess what? It was very much her actually leading the conversation. She's a life coach, so she's nosy by nature. And it was a lot of like, hey, I've noticed this. Does that feel better for you than this? And allowing me to sort of like guide what felt better, but her just being curious. And I had never felt safe enough to allow myself to be curious.
Mm.
So it was definitely like, first I was just a little bit androgynous, and then I felt like more masculine. And then I was like, definitely, I wish I had a penis. And I was like, well, I guess that puts me over the line a little than lesbian. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and it was just a lot of therapy, a lot of self-discovery, a lot of just trying things on, and mostly in private. It was very much like she referred to me with he, him pronouns and as Nick probably for 8 months before I was out. And so she, as an English lit major, very carefully just didn't use pronouns for me around other people that didn't know.
Mm.
I'm grateful for her ability to do that, because my mind, I don't know, that would have been as smart or sharp on that one. And then we sort of started telling people that felt safe as time went on. And then before I started hormone replacement therapy, it felt important to me for me to come out to our kids. That way it was something that they knew what was happening.
And so the kids at that point were, now are they 14, 12, 11, 7, and 6? Or are they older? Okay. That's what the ages they are now. What ages were they then?
Like 9 through 2.
Oh, all right. You're going to them together to give them this news?
Yeah. So what we did, because our therapist recommended it, was like, do something with your hands. Don't make it a serious sit-down conversation. And so it was very much around the kitchen counter on a long weekend. That way they would have a little extra time to take it all in. We were making pizzas. And it was Catherine started the conversation of like, well, you know how mom doesn't really act like a lot of other moms. And they were like, yeah. Yeah, well, you know how mom like doesn't really like to wear clothes that other moms usually like to wear. And it was like a lot of those. And like, well, that's because mom actually isn't a mom. It turns out that mom's a dad. And sort of explained the basics, and the kids asked very few questions. They were just like, cool, are you going to grow a beard? Like, that was the, like, can you grow a long beard to stroke was, like, the big question.
Can you, by the way?
It turns out, cannot.
Okay.
It's a hard no for me.
Yeah.
I don't have those genetics.
Mm.
Some people, not Some me. People.
Yeah. My 21-year-old doesn't have those genetics either. He has a little fuzz. He would love a beard. It's not happening.
Me too. And when I look at both of my brothers and my father and realize that none of us can grow a beard, I feel a lot better about it. It has nothing to do with my transness. It's 100% just like, nope, our family has patchy faces.
Yes.
That's just what's up.
So a couple of your kids were kind of old enough to understand that something was changing for them, right?
Yeah, it's this thing where like Catherine went and talked to them afterwards, like later that night when she was tucking Adventure in. She was like, well, big news about dad, huh? And Adventure was like, I mean, I guess. Catherine's like, well, what do you mean? She's like, well, I mean, I have eyes. And I was like, that's like, they're not, the kids are tuned into who we are. They're not tuned into who we're trying to be.
Mm-hmm.
right? Like, mm-hmm. you with your kids, you don't hide your tenderest parts. They see you when you're a shit show. They see you at your best. They see you when you're crying. They see you when you're trying not to cry. They see you in all the places, right? And they know who you are because they're yours, you know, because you have, if you're doing it right, I think they should have that intimacy. And, you know, I think that as we all get older, I think we are on purpose supposed to pull away from our parents. And so that intimacy is lost a little bit. But I think that because they were all still kids, they didn't have stories about what any of that meant, right? Like, we had always been a queer friendly family. Even when we were, when I was married to Chris, like, it was just, that's who we've always been. And so there was never any, like, there's never anything wrong with that.
Right. Right. That's lovely. That really is. And I love the idea that your kids just see you as you, and that's who they love.
Yeah. They didn't care about me being trans. They were definitely upset about us getting divorced 10 times more than me being trans. Like, that was a life event. Me transitioning, I don't really think of as like a big life event for them, I don't think.
Well,
I could be wrong.
Right. I was just going to say, and speaking of your divorce, tell me about your living situation now.
Well, we live on a wonderful little remote island off the coast of BC. It's a super hippie place. And we, Catherine and the kids and I, live in the main house. And then we built a little cabin that Chris lives in. And he does 2 weeks here, 2 weeks in Alberta, 2 weeks here, 2 weeks in Alberta.
I just love that so much.
Yeah, it's so much nicer for the kids. They don't have to go anywhere. They're just like, they live their life. And, you know, and when he comes here, Catherine and I will usually sneak away for 3 or 4 days and be like, oh, we're gone and out. And he hangs out with our oldest too. Like, at Christmas time, they all get gifts from him. At their birthdays, they all get, like, we treat us like we're just all one family.
Yeah. Well, you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that is what, like, our marriage is over, but our family is not, and it never will be.
That's beautiful. And you know what else I'm thinking, and you can tell me if this doesn't feel right for you, but it feels like when you were living as a woman, you got to be the mom that you didn't have, and now you're getting to be the dad that you didn't have.
That's like some deep shit.
Right? Well, because, like, look what you were talking about, the limitations that your dad had at his age with, you know, the tools, what was available, not knowing how to keep a family together, a co-parent. And you're doing it. You and Chris and Catherine have figured out this way to co-parent in a way that makes it one family, which is amazing. It's really amazing. And, you know, Scott and I were talking about this because we're both divorced. And there were points in our divorces and post-divorce where we wanted to fight with our exes over mainly stupid shit. Sometimes not so stupid, though. But really, you know, we just kind of like our shoulders would relax when we realized we just really want our kids to be happy, right? That's the priority. So then what does the other stuff really matter? And you guys have done that so beautifully. You've prioritized your children and built this family. So,
and I think that we did it from the get-go. And this is not like a toot my own horn thing because it's whatever. But when we got divorced, I left the house and I didn't ask for my half out of it. And part of that was because I felt like it was important for Chris to get to continue the life he had.
Yeah. Yeah.
That me choosing that I didn't want to continue the life that I had didn't mean that I should torpedo the life that he had.
Absolutely.
And, like, I wouldn't suggest it for most people. I, you know, I make my own money. I have a lot of privilege. I had a business at the time. I had the ability to do that. But I think that for us, that was the thing that, like, I knew that for him, he was afraid of losing the life that he had. That was his big fear.
Yeah.
I knew that he was afraid of our kids losing the quality of life that they had.
When you are in love the way that you describe with Catherine, you know, one can afford to be generous when you're in that position. That's the win, you know?
Yeah.
That's the real win. And boy, I just love this conversation. Thank you so much for this. I wanted to ask you one more thing. What is Epic Danger?
So Epic Danger is my first two birth children's names.
Oh.
Yeah. So okay. The first kid I birthed is Danger. Adventure is Catherine's birther.
Okay.
Or
yes.
The one. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then Epic is our 11-year-old boy. And then we have Wild, who's 7. And then Mayhem, who is 6.
Mayhem?
Yeah. Because he was born on Christmas Day via emergency C-section.
No.
4 weeks early. So he gets the name Mayhem.
Oh, my God. Those are – I've never heard a collection of names like those.
Aren't they awesome?
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And so are you. So, Nick, where can people find you?
People can find me mostly on the gram at We the Norths. And the website, the same place. WeTheNorths.com.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for this. And please tell Catherine that I said hello, and I'm glad she was able to share that experience with me and bring the two of us together in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all magic.
It is all magic, yeah.
And so, I really felt like I was on the farm, like the birds and the chickens in the background. I mean, there's a whole other element to this interview.
Right.
Yeah, plus I have that cabin thing now, and Chris is only here every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I'm just
we could
saying,
do some therapy up
do
there.
Do some immersion therapy.
Come up for that immersion therapy.
And we do need to just disclaim that there were no animals harmed during the making of this podcast.
Yeah.
They're actually quite happy.
They're quite happy. And the little chick got down from the brooder, so that was good
true.
News, too.
All is well.
All right. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you so much, Nick. Hey, honey, what a great episode that was.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, now let's get on with some Patreon shout-outs.
Yay.
Yeah, who do we have up first?
We have Mercedes Cusick, LMFT.
Ah, Mercedes.
Yes, Mercedes is a licensed trauma therapist and a certified EMDR therapist. Mm. This means, I know you're going to ask, right?
Oh, yeah, what does this mean?
She has had advanced training in complex and developmental trauma, and she's doing something really special called EMDR intensives.
Right, in case you didn't know, because I didn't know this.
I didn't know either.
You didn't? You had to look it up?
Yes.
EMDR stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. So simply by stimulating both sides of the brain, it helps to heal the brain and desensitizes traumatic or upsetting memories.
That is so dope.
It's cool, huh?
Right? So what she's offering is a concierge curated program that's just for you. Not you, hun, but just for our listeners.
Okay. Could be just for me.
Right. So you could spend a long time in weekly therapy, but why do that when her EMDR intensives, so they range from like a half a day to several days, and they're the equivalent of, get this, 2 to 6 months of weekly therapy.
Honey, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's also been used to effectively treat a wide range of mental health problems. But I think it's important to mention that there's no need to talk extensively about disturbing experiences. And because this intensive format decreases treatment time, it also saves you considerable money in the long run.
Exactly. So if you want to start feeling better now, and why wouldn't you, right? The EMDR intensives are the way to go. And California residents, click the link in our show notes to find the link to Mercedes Cusick's website. Book your EMDR intensive today. That's Mercedes Cusick, LMFT, licensed trauma therapist. She's located in Woodland Hills, California. That's here in Southern California. But see our show notes for the website. It's www.mercedescusick.com.
Speaking of feeling good, what's new with the How to Do the Pot podcast?
Ah, so you're talking about previous guest Ellen Scanlon, who we love.
I am. Welcome back, Ellen. Thank you for being a Patreon.
Yes, and she has the How to Do the Pot podcast, and they are demystifying cannabis for women.
How cool is that?
And now they've just released their new Sleep 101 series, and in these short episodes, real women share how cannabis helps women fall asleep and stay asleep and not wake up with a weed hangover.
Mm, that sounds important.
And on the regular episodes of How to Do the Pot, every week you can listen to fun, short episodes that answer all the questions women secretly Google about cannabis. How to Do the Pot shares women's personal stories and advice from the experts to help with solutions around stress, sleep, sex, and chronic pain. Did I say sex?
You did. Let's say sex again.
With the goal of helping women feel more confident in their choices about cannabis. If you're ready for practical advice about weed by women for women, listen to How to Do the Pot wherever you get your podcasts.
Next up is Cute Booty Lounge.
It is Cute Booty Lounge. Speaking of by women for women, right?
Right on.
Right. So this was a concept. Kelly Nishimoto.
Kelly's
we love
back.
Her. This was born in Kelly Nishimoto's garage in 2004.
There's a great episode about that.
And she's been a sponsor of the podcast for a long time. But In 2004, she was looking to make pants that embraced a woman's curves, right? Particularly the booty.
Mm-hmm. She did it. She nailed
the name. But she wanted them to still be polished enough to wear out and about. So her signature, the patented scrunch booty pockets, cute booty lounge, is made by women and for women, just like I said before, but also right here in the USA. The company is incredible, female and minority owned. So you want to go to cutebooty.com in our show notes and order yours today. What do people always say when I wear the leggings, hon?
Cute booty.
Cute booty. Exactly. Oh, and now Kathleen Hahn, hon.
Hey, Kathleen, a fantastic friend of the show, one of my dear friends for a long time. Thank you so much for supporting our podcast.
Yes, thank you, Kathleen.
We know you're out there working really hard. Really hope that our podcasts are helping you get through your long days.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. Shout out to Kathleen. Shout out to Cute Booty Lounge. Shout out to How to Do the Pop podcast.
Ellen.
And Ellen Scanlon, yes. Mm-hmm. And shout out to MercedesQsick.com.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for listening. The Only One in the Room is produced by the creative genius that is Scott Slaughter and edited by the uber-talented polymath Christina Barcy and her team at Avon House Productions. Hey, you're still listening? Good. Please subscribe right now while you're thinking about it, quick. Before you forget. And be sure to like and leave us a review of the show. Want to connect with some other Only One listeners? Be sure to join our private Only One in the Room Facebook group or check out Patreon on our website for exclusive content that you won't find anywhere else. And do you have an Only One in the Room story that you'd like to share? Please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.